We are continuing on our series called Disciples, What Does It Mean to Follow Jesus? And we've covered the first Sunday, what does it mean to believe in Jesus? And then the next Sunday, last Sunday, we covered what does it mean to serve Jesus? Any cross-lifers who have been around long enough know what today will be then if we've done believe, serve, live. Grow is next week. Live. What does it mean to live full of Jesus? Jesus is going to teach us today. All right. So Ronnie is at the beach. He's on spring break. He might be, Ronnie, you might be watching this on Monday afternoon. Hope you're enjoying the beach and spring break. And Ronnie puts his toes in the sand and leans back, puts his arms behind his head. He exhales and he says, "Oh, I'm on spring break. Life is good." He's unplugged from his everyday responsibilities. At Grandma's funeral, they say, she lived a good life. If you pay attention to the city of Pflugerville and our community here and our Chamber of Commerce, and they have a motto for Pflugerville, do you know what it is? You know what the city of Pflugerville motto is? Where quality meets life. If you ask one of my buddies how he's doing, he always has this response. Living the dream, baby. So life is good. She lived the good life, where quality meets life. Living the dream, living the dream. All those things, here's what they have in common. We like to describe life in ideal terms. Why? It's because we know a few things. I'm going to tell you three of them. Number one, we know that life is a gift. None of you planned for your mother to get pregnant. None of you told her to conceive you. Right? All of us were given the gift of life by God and by our parents. And so we know that life is a gift. That's why we call it the present. We also know that life is an opportunity to find meaning, to fulfill a purpose that some we're chasing, we're here for a reason, and life is an opportunity to find out what that reason is and to go after it and to get it. Right? Grab life by the horns. Grab all the gusto you can get that's in every one of us. Life is an opportunity. And here's the third thing, why we describe life in ideal terms. We know that the possibility exists that we'll miss that. We know that the possibility exists that we will be so over busy that we'll look in the rearview mirror someday with a lot of regrets. I have some for how I've lived, how I've been a dad, a husband, a pastor. I have regrets. I look in the rearview mirror and I say, I missed that. We all do. Or maybe we believe too many lies. And we're not really living the real version of ourselves that God has made us to be. And there's a lot of pretending going on. And that brings a lot of pressure. Living a lie is hard. Or it might be that we are lusting after life experiences that overpromise and underdeliver. Or we're just plain out looking for the easy life. And when we do, Jesus tells us we're going to miss the life that is truly life. That's in a Bible verse. 1 Timothy talks about a life that is truly life. I want to know what that is, don't you? You want to know what the life that is truly life is? And so we talk about being full of life. And so Jesus actually promises that. He says, you can have life and have it to the full. Full of what? Full of Jesus. Full of Jesus. You can have life and have it to the full. And so Jesus says, here's where you're going to find me. You're going to find me and my teachings in the Bible. And so if you want a full life, look here. And he promises, these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing, here it is, you may have life in his name. Those are big promises for people who speak of life in ideal terms and realize that life may not be all that ideal for us, but Jesus says, it is when you're connected to me. So we're going to talk today about how you will experience and enjoy a more fulfilling life. That's that second half of our mission statement, actually, here at Cross Life, to connect people to Jesus. And then once you're connected to Jesus, help you live a more fulfilling life. What does that look like? We're going to see what that looks like today. Jesus will help us. To help, I'm going to ask you some diagnostic questions. Okay? These are diagnostic questions you can look in the mirror and ask yourself about how am I doing living the full life? Okay? Here are some. There's lots. Here's a few I wrote down. How often do you feel carefree? Are you excited about your future? Are you happy? What is the ability to make or break your day? How often do you compare yourself to others? Are you thriving or surviving? Men, do you feel like you have what it takes? Men, do you respect yourself? Ladies, do you feel desired? Do you see yourself as beautiful? Teens, what makes you feel embarrassed? How important is it that other teens like you? Singles, divorced, widowed, does your single status make you feel inferior or lonely? This is for all of us. Are you healthy and balanced? Do you look in the mirror and see a failure? Do you look in the mirror and see a victim? If you died tonight, are you certain that you would be in heaven? I figured out the other day why people tend to have some of their best thoughts in the shower. No? Didn't happen to you? Is it just me? Or do you have some of your best thoughts in the shower? Anyone else? Don't be embarrassed, okay? Shower thoughts? Anyone else have shower thoughts? I have shower thoughts, shaving thoughts, and driving thoughts. But the best one comes in the shower. Why? You know why that happens? Because it's the place in our lives where we are most unplugged from our screens and forced to slow down. Okay, so one of my mentors wrote this in a blog, and I thought it was very, very well written. Listen carefully. He says this: we've been sucked into a pace of life that nobody is enjoying. Everybody I know, they're busy. We're spending 3 hours a day using apps on our phone, 10 hours viewing media, and we consume enough information each week to crash a laptop. We're enchanted by the endless social media circus, and we're snagged by every new notification. And then he's a big J.R.R. Tolkien, Lord of the Rings fan, and so then he quotes Bilbo Baggins, The Hobbit, in The Lord of the Rings. Okay, here's a Bilbo quote now. He's quoting Bilbo Baggins from The Lord of the Rings. Bilbo said this: I feel all thin, sort of stretched, like butter that has been scraped over too much bread. It's a Bilbo thing to say, isn't it? It's a Hobbit thing to say. Like butter scraped over too much bread. You know, the slick marketing gimmicks of companies that want to take your money, they know this. They know you. They know us. And they know that generally we are overcommitted and undernourished. They know this, which is why they offer what they believe that we will believe is the best solution. You know what that is? When we're overcommitted and undernourished, the best solution is a quick fix. All right? We want a press the button, right? An easy solution, not drive through, door delivery, convenient, fix my life in 30 minutes promise, and they give it to us, and then we believe it. All right, here's the latest example, right here, check this out. This just came out this past week. This is real, I'm not making this up. This is Campbell's new soup flavor, just came out, grilled cheese and tomato soup. People, are we that stretched and that overcommitted and that busy that we cannot warm up a pan on the stove, butter some bread, right? Y'all butter your bread when you make grilled cheese, you better, if you don't, get out of here. Okay, butter some bread, put a slice of cheese. It's even okay if you peel open, if you have this American Craft singles and you have to peel the plastic off. That's okay. You don't have to slice the cheese. It's all right. You can do this. Put one slice in there. Put another piece of bread on. Put it in a pan. Turn it over in the pan. And it's crunchy and it's gooey on the inside. And oh, grilled cheese is so good. And then you dip it in your, right? You dip it, right? Okay, dip it in your tomato soup, right? Where has all of a sudden that's gone? Are we that stretched and that slow that we have to just get life in a can? It's not a sin to eat grilled cheese and tomato soup. Actually, I'm going to try it myself and see how good it is. But it signifies a worldview that life should be easy. And if it's not easy, it's not good. And that's a lie. Think about this with me, and I want you to answer this question. If you could only have one, you can't have both, you can only have one, easy or good? If I made you choose, which one would you take? Because sometimes you can't have both. I remember my dad telling me as I was growing up, it's stuck in my head. It's one of those dad sayings I can't get rid of. Son, there's the easy way and the right way. And sometimes, maybe a lot of times, can't have both. All right, Jesus is going to teach us now, and let's listen to his words about this in John 10, verse 10. So this is Jesus speaking now, and he says this. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that you may have life and have it to the full. This is the beans, people. Have overflowing life with so many beans, they go everywhere and everybody wants to play with them. Right? You can have life. He says, I want you to have this life. Wow, how do I get that? Well, this is Jesus' answer to the get it now, press a button, door delivery, easy life, the lie that we fall into. This is his answer to that. And he's saying, first of all, the door delivery, press a button, easy, quick fix life, he says, is a liar. That's the thief. And what does the thief do? The thief only steals. So that worldview, Jesus says, is not a giver, it's a taker. It takes from you, it robs from you, it destroys. And now what does Jesus do? He contrasts himself with that. And he says, I don't take, I give. Jesus does not take your joy, he does not steal your joy, he gives you full joy. Jesus doesn't take your peace. He gives you full peace. Jesus doesn't take the fun out of life. If you think Jesus takes the fun out of life, you're worshiping the wrong Jesus. Jesus does, he's not a taker. He doesn't take the fun out of life. He gives you life that is fun. He doesn't take obligations from you and rules you have to keep to get right with him. He gives you full payment on the cross. See that? Jesus is telling you, I'm not the thief. The lies in this world, those are the thieves. Don't believe them. I am a giver, not a taker. Jesus is not the butter that spreads us too thin. He's the bread of life. Jesus is the manna in your desert. And Jesus is the real presence in Holy Communion. He's real and he has everything that you need to be full. Okay, a few more verses. These will help you out. I'm going to Jesus' own words here in Matthew chapter 5. This is from his Sermon on the Mount. Listen to what he says here. Here it is. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. So you're saying, how do I get this full life? How do I get full Jesus in my life? Hunger and thirst for what he has. This does not say you have to be a gourmet chef who knows how to make some recipe made up of some rules and to have what it takes to qualify to follow Jesus. This is not what this says. This says you just have to be hungry. And maybe you're hungry for a grilled cheese sandwich and a separate bowl of tomato soup. Or maybe you're hungry for both together. That's okay. Just be hungry, Jesus says, for me. When you're hungry, you're filled. Nothing else for you to do. You're filled. Jesus promises. All right, next verse. Whoever finds their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. Believe in Jesus, and you are not a victim of life. You are a victor with the life that Jesus gives. That's what he says right there. All right, now I'm going to go to Psalm 23. If you're not convinced yet, here's Psalm 23, very popular psalm in the Old Testament. Psalms are like the songs of the Old Testament, of ancient times, and here's one song written by King David, often called the Shepherd Psalm, and it says this, "The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing, he refreshes my soul, my cup overflows." Overflows. So, how much does Jesus give? How much forgiveness and mercy does he give to you for your past mistakes? Overflows, more than you need. How much healing does he give to you for the present, and how much hope for the future? More than you will ever need. How much life does he give to you? How much of your life does he care about and fill up with his presence, with his walking along you like a shepherd walks with his sheep? More than you need. How much salvation and promise for eternal life in heaven does he give? More? It's overflowing in you. If you've read your Bible a few times and know the story, when Jesus fed the 5,000, he performed that miracle and he turned 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish, he turned them into food that fed 5,000 people. But you know, if you're a Bible reader, do you know the story? You know what happened afterwards, after he fed the 5,000 people? Right? This is like the cherry on top of the ice cream. What happens? He said there were basketfuls of leftovers. The people ate and were satisfied, the Bible says. They were full. And Jesus didn't make just barely enough to feed them. He made leftovers, more than enough in baskets. He's saying, follow me, and you'll always have enough. I'm not just going to give you morsels. I'm not just giving you crumbs. More than enough. How about this? Remember his first miracle? Bible readers here, follow Jesus' life, you read the gospel. His first miracle, John chapter 2, is the wedding at Cana. And in those days, wine was a staple at the wedding reception. They ran out of wine. And so Jesus turned water into wine. Okay, veteran Bible readers, what kind of wine? Yeah. Argentinian Malbec. Vintage 2012. That would be best for me. He made the best. You appreciate wedding banquets, right, Michaela? He didn't just make enough to get by or the right, you know, enough to make people say that, okay. He made the wine so that people went, whoa, this is the best wine we've ever had in our life. Be hungry for and thirst for Jesus, and he will do that for you. Not give you physical wine unless you need it and he knows you need it, but make you go, whoa, I had no idea how much he could satisfy me. That's what he's saying with those miracles. All right, I'm going to give you a little bit more of Jesus here and wrap up with a story, and we're going to be done. So, more words from Jesus in John chapter 10. He says this, I am the gate for the sheep. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. I thought that was interesting that Jesus says, first he says he's the shepherd, and then he says he's the gate. That's weird. It's two different things. What is he talking about? I finally figured this out and did some research about how shepherds in Jesus' day operated, and here's what he's talking about. So a shepherd, at the end of the day, during the day, the shepherd would help the sheep graze on the different pastures and the mountainsides and the plateaus, and they'd kind of be all spread out. But at night, when the coyotes like to prowl and the wolves come out and the predators come and the goats become promiscuous among the sheep, and okay, what does a shepherd do? He designs and builds a sheep pen. And in those days, a shepherd would design and build a sheep pen. It kind of depending on what was around, but usually he'd like to use rocks or stones, and he'd make a circle. How big, depending on how many sheep, but let's just say he has a dozen sheep, right? So he'd probably make a sheep pen about half the size of this stage, maybe even a little smaller, and he'd try to use some stones on the bottom if he had them, and then he would gather sticks and, you know, create like a wall, right? And he'd create a full circle except for about a 5 foot, 10 inch, 6 foot entryway that wasn't closed off. That was the doorway. So then he'd work on building this while his sheep were grazing, and then he would bring the sheep in for the night and corral all the sheep and come on in, sheep, get inside, okay? And they were within this protective wall. He often left pointy sticks on the top like ancient barbed wire to keep the predators at bay, to keep them out, and the sheep were safe in there. And then during the night, you're thinking right now, well, that's dumb. What about the 5 foot, 10 inch doorway? If you can't see me, I'm lying on the floor right now. 5 foot, 11 and 1/4 inch doorway. Covered with me, the shepherd. If any sheep, it's gotta get up. All right. If any sheep wants to get out, they have to go through the shepherd. If any wolf wants to get in, he's got to go through the shepherd. That's Jesus saying to you, I'm your gate. And he's saying two things when he says that. He's talking about safety and security, and he's talking about sufficiency. So Jesus is saying, when you live full of me, when you believe in me and you follow me and you hunger for me and you thirst for me, I am your safety and security more than your 401k, more than your employment itself, more than your parents, more than your retirement, more than your allowance, more than your government. I am your safety and security. And then he's also saying this, when you're full of Jesus, he satisfies you more than anything else. He's your excellent vintage wine, right? He's your leftover bread and fish feeding the 5,000. He satisfies you more than anything else. And that means you can look at anything else in your life that disappoints you and say, oh, well, I have Jesus. I'm fully satisfied. That's what he wants to do. So, practice this. Okay, practice this. What I want to do now is just conclude with, what does this actually look like? Living full of Jesus? And living full of Jesus, being one of his sheep, looks like this. Practice the big three. So the big three is something we talk about at CrossLife, and the big three is personal time with God in your devotional life, being in a small group, and coming here on Sundays. That's living the full life of Jesus. So every morning, go through Jesus, your gate. When you get up and you leave your safe sheep pen in your bed and you take on the crazy world for the day, you want to go through Jesus, your shepherd, and have a quiet, intimate moment with him, listening to his word, being in prayer, and saying, Jesus, I'm now ready for the day. And then when you go back to bed, before you go to sleep, do the same thing. Spend time with Jesus. That's your one-on-one time with Jesus. And then be with some other sheep in a small group of about 8 to 12 people and get to know each other richly and deeply. And let them lead and guide you and learn from their what they celebrate, learn from their mistakes. They learn from you in a small group. And then be here to celebrate more, to celebrate the richness, the wedding banquet wine of Jesus, the high fives and hugs when he fed the 5,000, to celebrate with joy, worship like we can't do it anywhere else. That's living full of Jesus.